That was not gold.
Okay.
That was garbage.
All right.
That's an edit point. That's okay. What that is.
Oh, well. I'll try again with the jokes later. Country music is playing. Things are happening all around Fantasy Outliers Central. Welcome back to Fantasy Outliers, the podcast.
Hey, everybody.
It's Dave.
And Bro Dave, apparently.
You're Bro Dave now, that's right. Being christened that in the last episode brother.
I was tagged Bro Dave.
We're back, Dave. We're back in my basement amongst the folded laundry and children's toys and cats live in my basement.
Hopefully no dogs barking this time, but we can't guarantee that.
It happens. Walter will be heard when it's time. So anyway, thanks for those of you who listened last week to learn about kind of where we came from and where Chris came from with his idea for founding Fantasy Outliers. So I've had a real couple of weeks.
How so?
You know, just like... I had a sick baby for a couple of days and was out of work.
Mm-hmm.
I had a sick dog for a couple of days and had to stay home with the dog and him checked out.
What happened to him?
Well, he eats everything.
Yeah.
And one day he was just really sick and being sick up until 2 o'clock in the morning, and I stayed up with him and I got to work on some of the articles on our Medium blog while I was up with him. So
thumbs up to that. Well, that's a silver lining, I guess.
Yeah. But you know, taking him to the vet and all that stuff. And, also, earlier this week, my son got kicked out of school for biting other kids.
Really?
Yeah.
How many kids?
It's three now. It's up to three. It's been 3 days in a row.
Why is he biting people?
He's a baby. Yeah. You know, but it's just kind of, it's never a fun phone call to get. And also to be like at my office being like, hey guys, I have to go pick up my hooligan 20-month-year-old. And I don't know, take him to the park as a reward for biting somebody, I guess. I don't know what else I was supposed to do with him.
What did you do? Just run home?
We came home and just, I took him to the park because I didn't know what else to do with him on like a beautiful Monday afternoon in August. So
it's not the worst thing, I guess.
No, I mean, it's, you know, I haven't really, wasn't the worst thing in the world.
At least he's not biting you.
Yeah. Well, that's stopped, fortunately. But, he's got, you know, just doing his thing. Learning to be a part of the world.
You know, you got to probably socialize him.
He just really wants me to stop talking about value over replacement. I think he's just worried about that.
He's just sick of that.
Yeah, he's like my
I just want to eat my peas. Can you just shut up about value over replacement?
He's trying to show me that he's a +4 by biting other kids that are behind. And the other thing that happened kind of in the last couple of weeks is that Dave and I went away to a nice like cabin weekend retreat.
We did.
It was really great. It was us and like three other couples.
Our
wives and girlfriends and friends' wives and girlfriends and friends.
Fiancés and everybody. Yeah.
To a nice cabin.
Western Illinois. Mm-hmm. Beautiful, beautiful Western Illinois. It's actually pretty. It was really nice. It was right by the Mississippi.
Yeah, enjoying those summer days, sitting out on the patio, talking about how to get more people to listen to this podcast. So, if you're listening and could do us a favor, we'd really appreciate it.
If you've made it this far,
if you could please give us a rating review, you know, 5 stars, we'd love on iTunes. We'll take honesty.
I would depending on what you have to say at this point.
We just love to hear some feedback.
Just give us something.
Yeah. And also you can reach out to us at podcast@fantasyoutliers.com. So anyway, welcome back to Fantasy Outliers, the podcast and vacation roundup. We're here today to talk about a topic that comes up a lot as people are getting ready for the draft. And that is the idea of kind of positional scarcity. The thinking about how that affects when you take people at certain positions in fantasy sports in general. Today, of course, we're going to talk about fantasy football specifically, since that's what we do
here. This is what we do.
I will say, you know, so Dave, will you give us a quick definition of positional scarcity, please?
Yeah, positional scarcity is basically talking about how many players at a certain position are actually valuable. So you might have a certain position that has a lot of players that are pretty great. You might have one that has like you know, there's only a couple of players at each position that are actually make a difference.
Right.
Or maybe, you know, everybody's about the same.
Yep. So it's usually applied as a phrase to positions that are really shallow or like there's not many players in the actual player pool that you would use there, or this idea of, hey, I only need one of them. So I don't need to like worry too much about that position because I only need one.
Yeah.
So guess which positions you only need one of in most fantasy leagues.
Wide receiver?
No, it's not wide receiver. That is wrong.
Sorry, I've never played fantasy before.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Let's try that again.
Defense.
Yeah. Well, okay. Defense. So there are people who believe that because there are very few good defenses and it leaves everybody else bad defenses, that they should grab a defense early. That does fit with positional scarcity.
Well, another one is tight end.
Right.
Right.
Tight end is one that people think about a lot because there's a moment in the draft where basically nobody wants to take a tight end for a really, really long time because there's so many that are just worth the same as each other.
Right.
Or at least that's what conventional knowledge has been. Right.
That's what I've always heard. And that's what I've always been told. And I drafted off of that kind of supposed knowledge for a long time.
And to be clear, the conventional wisdom is don't take a tight end early. Because
they're all kind of the same beyond, you know,
like the first one.
Yeah.
And if you take the first one, you know, a lot of us think of Gronk as being the first one these days, of course, you're missing out on players that are just better and that just score you more points overall.
Right. I mean, there's a big argument that I think comes up every year. Like, should you take Gronk in the first round? And, you know, I've heard that ad nauseum and arguments for and against. And I think where most people have landed, at least from what I can tell, is that the argument is unless he has the best tight end season of all time, it doesn't really make sense to put him in the first round.
Right.
Or take him in the first round. I haven't run the numbers on that, so I don't know for sure if that's true, but I'm assuming that it is.
Yeah. I mean, the problem is that people, and I've definitely done this for years too, where people always are like, hey, if you take Gronk, you're missing out on, you know, Odell Beckham, let's say last year, maybe like
super stud.
I guess Odell Beckham was probably earlier, but it's that a real like top five wide receiver running back that's just a stud that's going to put up 60 points for you every year or every week. And there's a lot of people who kind of feel like, great, you got the best person at tight end, but their potential isn't that high in a raw scoring capacity to really make up for what you missed out on the players that you could have taken in it early as well instead of them.
So Chris looked into this and wrote an article about it that's up on Medium right now called Two Reasons to Draft a Top Three Tight End. A couple of things that he found that I think, I don't know, were surprising to me. I don't know if they were surprising to you, but...
For sure.
Yeah.
I have lived by playing it as conservative as possible.
On tight end?
Well, in fantasy football in general. I'm the guy who punts every category except for wide receiver and running back. I'll take all wide receivers and running backs until like the seventh round.
Yeah. I think I play a little bit more aggressively than you because I've definitely take some guys early. I got bit by the Gronk bug because I accidentally took him the first year that he was the first year that he blew up. I was actually going for Aaron Hernandez and somebody snaked him in the round before and I was like, I want some of the tight end action and Patriots tight end action. And I ended up picking up Gronk and I was like, he'll be all right.
Yep.
And he was amazing.
Yep.
So I've been biased towards tight ends for a long time.
Yeah, because they really do make a difference, especially when you take them in the 11th round.
Yeah, I think I took them in 12.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, it was amazing.
And that's what I tend to do every year is I'm looking for like, you know, I want Delanie Walker the year before anybody knows who Delanie Walker is, basically.
And you're hoping to draft your whole team or at least all your starters before you start dipping into the tight ends.
Absolutely. And it's the same thing with quarterback, honestly. Yeah. Like, but that's another topic for another day.
Yeah, totally.
But I do think that there is a lot of strategy out there for drafting that says you gotta go, no matter if you go running back, wide receiver, or you do this like trendy zero running back thing and take a bunch of wide receivers early and a quarterback or whatever. There's a lot of strategy out there that basically says the scarce positions do not make up for the opportunity cost of missing the less scarce positions just in raw points. Chris's article, like Dave said, kind of takes a different spin on this, and I was really surprised by the results of what he was looking into.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing that we need to point out about this is that we're talking about value. I mean, everything we're doing is talking about value.
Yeah, in line with Fantasy Outliers' whole philosophy, right. This topic as well is strongly related to the idea of value over other players at a position. Value is relative to the other options you could have played instead of the player you played.
Yeah, so for example, you might start 10 tight ends in a league. They're not all going to have positive values because some of them will be below average starters. So you'll have at least a couple positives. You'll have at least a couple negatives. If everything was exactly even, you would have 5 positives and 5 negatives. Right. So having a zero value player or a replacement value player is not necessarily a bad thing. It just means that you don't have an advantage. Yeah. At that particular position, but you are getting by.
Right.
So,
and one thing to think about here too is, and I have heard about this strategy before, where you can think of your fantasy team as being a series of matchups. And we talked about this in the value episode a little bit too, where you think about it as a series of matchups position by position against your opponent's position by position. So if every week your goal is to start a running back that does better than league average or your opponent's running backs, same thing for quarterback, same thing for wide receivers, etc., same thing for tight end, you can... By definition, if all of your players were better than your opponent's players, you'd win that week, right?
Right. It's a really easy way to think about draft strategy and how you might want to construct your team. Like, right. I think I want to have, you know, a top 5 player at every position or something. I've heard that from other people before. Right.
But the key here is that what we do at Fantasy Outliers, again, is we look at that actual amount that each player is better or worse than each other or than the replacement player. So the thing that gets tricky if you start thinking about that head-to-head matchup of running back versus running back, wide receiver versus wide receiver, yada, 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 you get to a point where you go, well, I spent a high draft pick to get a running back that was really only good for positive 3 points against the replacement level, right? You can get in a situation where that's true, where at the same time, you could have spent the same pick for a tight end that would give you positive 3.5 against other tight ends, even though the tight end scores less raw points than the running back does.
Yeah, we're not really so much concerned about the raw points. We're talking about scoring more than your opponents at that position.
Yeah. And this is the type of thing that is really hard for me to get on board with as I see some of the analysis that's emerging out of Fantasy Outliers is that it's just so counterintuitive to me in some ways to be like,
how so? What do you mean?
Well,
by that?
I mean, I just generally want the best players, right? And I just want to find the person who I think every round is going to put up the most points for me.
Yeah, but it's not necessarily how it works. I mean,
it's really hard to get off of that as a bias, though, right? Because I've won plenty of leagues where I took this approach, right? Where I kind of said, I just really want to figure out who's the undervalued person that's available in this round that fits in my roster that I can grab. Mm-hmm. It's different if you think about it in the context of which player that's available right now is so much better than the other options at that position that they're gonna do enough work for me to be worth the investment that I'm making in them. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So Chris has a little example in here that's close to what I was describing. I'm just gonna read it really quick, a verbatim from his article, because I think it's nice to just kind of have it laid out really clearly. So if you're in a 10-team PPR league and one of your running backs scores 15 points per week on average, is that worth more or less to your team than your tight end who scores 13 points per week? The truth is that in a 10-team PPR, running backs on average score 12.1 points per week, right? So if you have a running back who scores 15 every week on average, And all running backs score 12.1. The difference there is 2.9 points, right?
Yeah, you're winning that position by almost 3 points every week, right, on average.
On the other hand, the tight end who scores 13 points per week actually nets you 3.5 points per week on average, because tight ends on average score 9.5 points a week.
Yeah, so you're actually scoring less points, but those points at that position is better, because overall it doesn't matter where the points come from. It doesn't matter which position group they come from.
Yeah.
It matters getting an advantage at that particular group.
Right. Because you're always playing against somebody who's also scoring points.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that's an interesting way to think about it. So the way that Chris sums it up in his article is, you know, don't chase points, chase value. And I think that that's something that people should definitely consider as they look at what's available to them at different moments in the draft when you're drafting. So that's kind of the first checkbox of what we have to discuss here, is like position scarcity through the lens of value, and the way that you can kind of, you should kind of adjust your mindset to think about that.
Mm-hmm.
So the other thing that's super interesting, and I, you know, by the way, listeners and Dave, I say interesting way too much, I realized.
We all like, have our vocal tics. I realized that I say, you know, all the time.
Yeah, you know is something that a lot of people say all the time. Not everybody goes, you know what's really interesting? And then 3 minutes later goes, yeah, but what was really interesting? And then this was also really interesting.
I'll be the judge of whether that's interesting or not.
It's pretty bad. Second podcast, I was like, wow, I think a lot of things are interesting.
I'm going to just leave all of, I'm going to add in extras for you. I'm going to take one from one part of the podcast and just slide it into the rest of it.
Could you do like a
supercut? I'll do a supercut.
Have you seen the supercut of Owen Wilson going, wow, no, wow, wow, constantly? It's pretty great. Can you do a supercut of me just going, you know what's interesting?
That's really interesting.
It's really interesting.
That's so interesting.
Yep.
This is really interesting, guys.
So anyway, the thing that actually really started to pull me over to Chris's point of view from his article about why you shouldn't punt tight ends, basically why you should consider drafting specifically a top three tight end, has a lot more to do with the fact that it looks like historically tight ends are actually much more consistently performing year over year than any other position.
Yeah, I think what that says is, well, I'll get back to a little bit of his analysis, is basically what he's finding is that when you look at draft position and the value that comes from those different slots, so first tight end in the draft, second tight end in the draft, third tight end in the draft, all the way down, regardless of what round they were taken in, we're just talking about the first three picks at that position.
Right. This is a big distinction because it is just the first one off the board,
right,
the second one off the board.
If
at
Gronk
each position
went in the first round, we don't care. If he went in,
right,
the second round, we don't care.
Right.
It's just the first three at that position. So
right,
what he's finding is that tight end kind of looks pretty different than other positions, as far as it seems like tight end is more of what I would describe as like a shelf.
Yep.
Versus, you know, a bell curve, or, you know, a nice even slope
down.
Yeah, from, you know, high on the left all the way down to low on the right. Tight end is a shelf, and that shelf is year over year pretty consistently
going back
top,
to 2011. So it's not like a,
but modern,
it's not forever.
Modern,
but
tight end era,
right?
Let's say the Gronk era ish.
Right.
The first three tight end picks tend to be pretty consistently better than the rest of the field.
Right.
So
let's pause 1 second and just kind of unpack what that means. What we're not saying that you should pick a tight end early,
no,
or something like
that's
that as a result of this. What Dave is really describing is sort of like it's an indication of how good or bad fantasy players on a whole are at predicting what players are going to be good and what players are going to be bad in each position, right? So if you look at the same chart that Dave is talking about for running back, it actually turns out that over the years, the third and fourth running backs off the board have way more value than the first and second consensus running backs off the board.
It's weird. It's not even at all.
Right. And what this means to me is the uncertainty. This is sort of a measure of uncertainty in how good we are as fantasy players as a whole. All fantasy players out there, not all, but like a good sample is what we have to work with, at knowing what order players should actually come off the board in,
right,
predicting their performance in the subsequent year, basically.
We're good at guessing tight ends, is what it's saying.
Fantasy players are good at guessing which tight ends are going to be good.
Yeah,
exactly.
We're not nearly as good as guessing running backs.
No.
Actually, we're pretty awful at it.
Yes.
From what we can tell.
Yeah, it turns out. Yeah, exactly. It turns out that we're not very good at the running backs. But tight ends, it seems like year over year we get it. Quarterbacks, we actually do a pretty good job
pretty
with
good
quarterbacks
job.
Too.
Yeah. And actually, I think overall we're pretty good at wide receivers too.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but the thing that's interesting about tight ends is just how steep the drop-off is and how consistent that positive value that's predicted through average draft position is every year.
Yeah, and I think it's the main thing, or one of the main points, the reason why he wrote this article is he noticed this shelf, and it's very consistent. 1, 2, 3, very high-value picks, like 3.1, basically 3.1 points above replacement. For those first three picks, and then it drops off really steeply after that. You know, the fourth pick on average is about a plus 1.1, and the fifth is at or below replacement.
Yeah, there's
level.
A ton of at or below ones after that.
Yeah, it's basically. I mean, I think what people are feeling, and when people talk about like how tight end is kind of you know, they're all the same or whatever, is they're feeling that at or below.
Right.
Replacement value for the entire field.
Yep.
And
I was
I don't know if anybody really knows what to do about it necessarily.
Yeah. I mean, I was definitely with people on that too. The thing that's different for me after reading this article is now I understand, or believe, I guess, a little bit more the idea that those first three can provide enough value to make it worth taking them when I could have taken the ninth best running back or something
right.
like that.
Right. And the second major point is that we are really good at predicting who those guys are.
Yeah.
I mean, year over year, you're seeing it stacked up in the first three picks, and then it drops off steeply. So if I think it speaks to like how you might change your draft strategy in those early rounds, in that first third of the draft that we talked about, where all the value tends to be, these three picks are in that first third.
Right.
So if you look at where... the first pick is taken, the second pick is taken, the third pick is taken. Chris has actually charted all of that out off of some historical data. And basically what we find is those first three are taken within the first 40 picks.
Right.
So within the first four rounds of a 10-team draft, let's say, the first three are getting taken. So kind of what that says to me is that if you want an advantage at this position... You know, you can on average get 3 points or so above replacement, which is a big step. You can actually take your normal draft strategy
for the first few rounds.
For the first couple rounds, you don't have to take Gronk. We're not saying you take Gronk in the first round.
Right.
That's actually not even necessary, because the first pick isn't necessarily that much different than the third in positive value.
Yeah.
So you could potentially wait until about, well, if you get to the fourth round and there's still the third highest ranked tight end available, it might be time to take him.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that that's definitely the type of stuff that I'm going to be looking at to inform when I want to take a tight end this year in particular. So I think that we should take a minute to talk about what this year looks like.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Okay.
So if you take a look at, I have a Fantasy Pros ADP right now. The top, what's interesting, God, I did it again.
Is it interesting?
It's very interesting.
It's so interesting.
So I think that while, you know, Chris's perspective, I think is very good, and like it's well thought, and it's the top three, but and the other thing I would say, by the way, is that it's not just a spike. That top three thing is not just a spike from like Gronkowski himself
No.
throwing off the values at the front of the draft compared to everybody else, because it has been pretty consistent in this era of fantasy football. You know, you got your Tony Gonzalez at one point in history, you got Antonio Gates, you got Jimmy Graham, all, you know, there is Kelce kind of like
creeping up.
Yeah. When he's good. And you know, this year he's ranked pretty highly. So I think that there is generally somebody who always has that opportunity to provide that value at the beginning of the draft in tight end. And so it's not just, hey, if Gronk is good, it throws all the numbers off. And if Gronk is gone, all the numbers kind of revert back to being zero. It's not that inconsistent or anything like that. But this year, if you look at the ADP on Fantasy Pros, just to talk about the way that we could translate this into the real draft that we'll be facing this year, you know, you got Rob Gronkowski at 21st by ADP. Travis Kelce, number 37. So he's at your kind of like end of mm-hmm. the fourth round. So it's actually pushing out a little bit further than what we've seen maybe the last couple of years.
And maybe that's good for fantasy players because it looks like you can wait even longer than traditionally to get a top three tight end.
And then what comes next is a cluster of players that I actually think are sort of similar to each other. Mm-hmm. So there's Greg Olsen, Jordan Reed, and Jimmy Graham at 49, 52, and 57 there in a sort of tier 2B or something like that. Because clearly Gronk is his own tier. Kelce, maybe you could say, is his own tier, but I think that the next four are close to each other skills-wise. Of course, you know, Jordan Reed is always kind of scary as far as like injuries go.
That brings up another point that's, I'm not going to say interesting again, but I think it's relevant is people don't tend to draft tight ends in the early rounds very much. And what you're describing here is this cluster in what did you say that pick was?
So it's 49 through 57. So it's basically the end of the fifth round and to the end of the sixth round. There's three that are taken.
That maps pretty closely to what our data says, that you really only get three taken in the first four rounds or whatever. And this year, maybe it's a little different. And then you get a bunch taken in the next, you know, two rounds. Yeah. Everyone fills out their roster and they're like, oh, I guess I need a tight end. And they start, I'm going to take a tight end early. Yeah. So that's like your fifth, sixth, seventh round pick.
Yep. So when you hear those names, Dave, I mean, are you gunning for Travis Kelce, who kind of fits the ADP of that person that we've taught, that kind of theoretical third best tight end that we're talking about?
In theory,
are you looking at down at the next couple players, or like, what are those, what do you think about those players?
In theory, I mean, I think predicting those top three tight ends or whatever it's going to be is you just have to be more sure of the guy.
Yeah.
You know, because it's, if you're going to take a swing at it, you got to hit it. Right.
Yeah.
So if a guy has injury risk, if the guys switch teams, you know, we don't want to have like a Julius Thomas situation.
Yeah.
I think most people saw that coming, so it wasn't that big of a deal.
Yeah, but personally, Jordan Reed, who's a phenomenal athlete, I think.
Yeah, but he's always hurt.
He is always hurt, and he has, you know, I've had him a bunch of times in fantasy leagues, and like, he's great when he's out there, but I mean, investing a pick with that much kind of weight to it on mm-hmm. him is very dicey to
it
me.
Is.
So I would probably just scratch him off my draft list.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Again, like being conservative with that pick early in the draft,
right.
especially, you know, I don't know if I would draft Jordan Reed that high, but I think if maybe I felt like the guys that I had gotten before that, the wide receivers and running backs, were solid, like I got the guys that I wanted,
yeah,
I'd feel pretty comfortable maybe saying like, okay, I'm going to take maybe a guy in the fourth or fifth or sixth. And I almost never draft tight ends before the fifth round.
Yeah. But this is making you think a little different about it, right?
Yeah, it is. But it's also a little scary though, too, because year over year, there's only three. So which three are there? You know,
right.
We think we know what the two are. This year it's Kelce and Gronk, but you know, that third group is in a cluster. So who's it going to be?
Right.
It's probably one of them. That's what history tells us.
So I think it's possible that this year it could be both Greg Olsen and Jimmy Graham, that so that the tier this particular year might actually be four, and Jordan Reed might provide a game value that's high enough to fit
maybe
in with that group, but might be...
Yeah, his average weekly value would be pretty high,
low,
but
yes,
his yearly value would
be low because I don't think
great.
He's going to have that many starts.
Yeah, I could see that.
So, you know, for me, if I'm going to employ this strategy, I'm totally looking at Greg Olsen. honestly.
Yeah, I mean, he is so consistent year to year. Yeah, I think he'd be a good pick at that position.
So Dave just said that the drop-off in tight end between the top three picks and the rest of the position is bigger than at every other position. I just wanted to, I have a chart here that I could talk a little bit about how much that drop-off actually is, because the amount of difference that it is huge. So for scale, you know, the first three picks at tight end tend to provide a total season value of 32.3 positive points. The first six picks in total, if you extend that out to be the first six picks of tight end, it's 14.7. So the average is dragged down from 32 to 14 in tight end. For comparison, the average in running back of the first three picks to the first six picks only goes from 30 to 27. So it goes from being a drop in running back of 3 points.
Not
total.
Even.
Yeah. Exactly, not three, it's like, yeah, it's 2.3 to, you know, 18 or whatever that is, 17 and a half, that 32.3 minus 14.7.
That shelf is real.
That shelf is real, and it's a different way to look at it. It's just like, it's huge, and then it, you know, it falls off quite a bit more if you look at the first 10 picks in total, it goes down to 9. So all of a sudden, you're talking about a tight end only being worth as good as a good defense. If it includes all 10 of the first 10 picks at tight end. Now, part of that is because the first 10 picks at tight end are taken so much later than the first picks at running back and things like that. The first 10 picks at running back and wide receiver. But I think it still illustrates the fact that that drop off is severe.
Yeah. So I think another thing that's kind of important in this discussion is durability of the players at these different positions. I mean, how many games would you expect a running back? How many things, if you took a running back in the first round, how many games do you think you would start him? Think you'd start him the whole year?
I mean, I would want
13 games
to,
in
of
a
course.
Season.
I would want to, but I mean, I think normally it's going to be about 11.
Okay.
Would be my guess.
Okay. So 13 weeks.
Well, it's
in
not
a year.
11 because there's a bye. So that takes it 12. So I'm going to say 10.
Okay. So 10. So you're actually pretty close. The number for running backs taken the first three picks, games started in a 13-week season for fantasy, is 9.4.
Okay.
So we know that running backs aren't the most durable. They get hurt all the time.
Right.
And I've heard the same thing about tight ends, too. I don't know why I feel that way and why people say that exactly, but the numbers tend to bear out in that direction. So for first three picks of tight end, average week starts is about 9.5. So almost right. Identical to running backs.
Right.
Now, is that a durability thing? I'm not sure. I mean, it could be. Another thing that comes to mind is that people like to play more games with tight ends because you're only starting one of them. So they're more available to pick up
right.
on average than running backs.
Yeah.
So it could be that just that people are swapping their tight ends out more often.
But 9.5 isn't that bad.
No, it's
what does it look like though if you extend it out to, because I know that what's the chart next to it is the first six picks.
Yeah, the first six picks. So it drops a little bit. It goes down to about 8.8.
Okay. What about a running back?
Running back actually holds really well.
Okay.
Through the first six picks. So 9.4 in the first three rounds, 9.2 in the first six. Or sorry, not the first three rounds, the first three picks.
Yeah.
Wide receiver, not really a surprise, is the best.
Right.
You're getting another game out of those guys, basically. So 10.6 for the first three picks and 10.4 for the first six. And that holds even in the first 10 wide receivers taken, you're still getting 10 starts out of them.
Yeah.
With a max 12 starts because you have a bye week on a 13-week season.
I think that's pretty interesting. Yeah, I did it again. I think it does run a little counter to where I think people used to expect wide receivers to get injured a bit more, but
they don't
in this side data. And maybe we'll do a podcast later about, you know, injury data and things like that. It looks like wide receivers are actually more durable than running backs and tight ends.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Or at least I guess you can say durability because that's what we're implying here.
Right.
But it's
also performance is wrapped up in that too, right?
Well, this is the number of weeks started in fantasy leagues.
Right.
It's not in the NFL.
Right.
It's just in fantasy. So this is actual fantasy league starts on average. So if people are playing games with their tight ends and swapping them out a lot or, you know, streaming defenses or even streaming quarterbacks, you know, that could affect, that would affect the data. Although we're so high up in the draft.
Yeah,
we're
but you're way, not streaming these guys.
You're if you're taking our quarterback at the top of the draft, you're not streaming that guy.
Right.
You know?
But I think the point that you're trying to make here is that people sometimes think that tight ends are less durable than other positions, and it turns out they're about the same consistency as running backs.
Right. Exactly.
The last thing that we could talk about really quick, since we're looking at the data and it's also in this article we've been referring to a lot tonight, is the fall off in total season value among positions other than tight ends. So we talked about how steep it is where it's consistent. There's always the top three tight ends return positive value, and then it dips really, really harshly. Let's talk a little bit about the way that the other positions look.
Yeah, so quarterback is actually fairly consistent. We're obviously the first couple picks are pretty high positive value, season and weekly. Looks like on average we're crossing into replacement value at about the sixth pick, which, you know, I think you would that actually makes a lot of sense if you're starting 10 guys and quarterbacks in a 10 team league.
Yep.
About half of them are going to be zero or negative.
Yep.
So,
yep.
You know, we're pretty good at predicting quarterbacks, yep. It would seem.
It goes down what could be a pretty consistent downward slope.
Yeah, and there isn't a massive spike anywhere in there that would make you concerned or make you want to change your draft strategy.
On the other hand, running backs, it's bizarre.
It's really weird. Like, when I first saw this, I was like, I don't even think this is right. Like,
right.
It is, but it's just very, is not, it does not map to what you would think would happen.
So it turns out that with running backs, we are consistently turns out that the third and fourth running backs taken are the ones that generate the most total season value.
And I think it just speaks to volatility at the position, because there's no reason why that should be the case other than there's a lot of negative value picks way early at the draft.
In running back.
Yeah, first round. I mean, think about last year.
Yes.
I mean, the guys last year.
I don't want to think about last year in the example you're about to give.
All right,
go ahead.
Well, okay, so who were the top four guys last year?
So the top four running backs by ADP, I believe, were
Zeke
Elliott, David Johnson, Adrian Peterson, and Todd Gurley.
Yeah.
Yes.
How much of that worked out?
Well, the two guys that I put all my chips in on last year, Adrian Peterson and Todd Gurley, did not work out at all in any league that I was in.
So there you go.
Yeah.
Top four picks, they were terrible. I mean, okay.
Two of them were historically good. Well, David Johnson was insanely good.
Yeah.
Zeke Elliott was great.
Yeah, exactly. I was actually a little surprised that Zeke was as good as he was.
Yeah, of course. He's a rookie.
He's
when
a rookie.
Last time that happened.
I just didn't, you know, this isn't backed up by any data that we have or anything.
Right,
not yet, at least. Right. But I was so skeptical of that. Everyone was putting him way at the top.
Good offensive line.
Great offensive line. I mean, he's a great running back, but still, man, rookie.
Yep.
So
running back has that weird quirk in it where I think that it just, like Dave said, it's just really volatile. The rest of the players in the top 10 taken running backs all hover around the same positive value. So it is interesting that all of the first 10 running backs historically generate positive value. Of course, year over year, that doesn't happen. So necessarily there's still ones that don't work out and those that do, but on average, they tend to.
There are more really bad running back picks in the early rounds than any other position.
Yeah. Yes, that is true too.
Which I guess, if you think about it, shouldn't really be that surprising. I was just surprised that how bad some of those early round picks were, you know? And we've talked about this too before offline, is like part of the reason for that might be that when you take a running back early, you're so desperate for them to work out, you just keep starting them.
Yes.
And so,
yeah, you don't get off the train.
You don't get off the train early enough. Like, you'll start them through week seven, even if they're just awful.
Yeah.
You know, not producing at all.
I mean, I'm not giving up on Todd Gurley. I didn't last year.
Yeah. I mean, he's a great player. Like,
I still came in fourth somehow.
Oh.
Yeah.
Fourth doesn't win you anything.
I know.
Yeah.
So, all right, the next position that people care about actually is wide receiver. And the data that we're looking at is actually a 10-team PPR league. So the points are all kind of up. So it looks consistently like wide receivers, the first 10 wide receivers are basically worth more than the first 10 running backs in a PPR league.
And that
so
is,
surprise guys, if you didn't know that, we have data, we're looking at data here that indicates that that's true.
Yeah. And like we said, we're pretty good at predicting wide receivers in general.
Yeah.
And two things about this that I think is important. Through the first, I guess it's 7 picks, you're getting really good value.
Yeah. Like those really good players.
Really good players. Like the field at the top end, that top tier of wide receivers is pretty strong.
And we do a good job as a fantasy community of identifying who those top 7 people will be year over year.
Yeah, there's very little volatility in those first 7-ish picks.
Right.
The other thing that I think is interesting about it is that the first pick at wide receiver is just bonkers.
Yeah.
It is like double the other picks.
It's the highest in its total yearly value position of any position taken, basically.
Yeah, it's crazy. Plus 60 over the entire season.
Yep, which is huge.
And then
defense and kicker, who cares? We're not talking about them today.
Yeah.
They're also, their charts look very scattered. And I think we'll delve into that in another topic in another day of when to think about taking a defense. Would you ever take a defense or kicker other than the last couple picks?
I have thoughts on this, but I'll save it.
Yeah, we both have thoughts on this that we'll save for another time. So thanks for joining us, everybody. We're going to wrap it up today. Just as a reminder, that article on Medium is called 2 Reasons to Draft the Top 3 Tight Ends.
Written by my brother, Chris.
Written by Chris.
Our founder.
Yes. And it's up there right now. You can check it out. We would love to hear feedback to either the podcast or to the article itself. You could post on in the comments section on Medium. It's medium.com/fantasy-outliers. You could email us at podcast@fantasyoutliers.com. You could send us some messages via Facebook. I just wanted to take a second to thank all the people who've liked our Facebook page. We're up over 400 likes right now, which is, given that we started this project about 3 weeks ago, I'm shocked that we have that many people that are interested.
Yeah, people are finding out somehow.
See the content coming their way. The Medium is starting to get a good number of views and reads, and we're getting some recommends. So to people who are reading those articles and maybe hear this, we want to thank you for recommending us to your friends. And if any of you like what we're doing, we'd love to hear about it. If you hate what we're doing, we'd love to hear about it. But, we're just two happy guys, happy to be here giving you smart math tips.
All right.
All right. So thanks for joining us.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
We'll talk soon.